You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 66, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. This is Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois. Welcome to the show. Incidentally, Radio Free Asgard is a proud member of the Comics Podcasting Network. So a bit of sad news in the comics world this week with the death of comics great Joe Kubert. Kubert was born in 1926 in Poland, but his parents immigrated to New York shortly thereafter. Kubert got his start in the comics business rather young, maybe as young as 11 or 12 years old. It said that he did some work uncredited back at MLJ, which was the publisher of Archie, back in the 1930s and 40s. But he's really best known for his work at DC Comics throughout the 50s and 60s, though he really did a lot of work throughout the years. Most of what he did were war comics and westerns, that sort of thing. He was really not a superhero artist. The only superhero work that really stands out in my mind that Kubert did were a couple of years' worth of covers of All-Star Squadron during the 1980s. Maybe the superhero that he's most identified with is the character of Hawkman, who he actually had professional ties to all the way back to the 1940s. But probably he's best known for his war comics, and in particular, The Adventures of Sergeant Rock. He was the regular artist on Sergeant Rock for untold years. I mean, definitely one of the longer runs on the book of any artist. What's funny is that Joe Kubert really didn't do very much work for Marvel at all, if any. His professional output, at least, seemed to be very much confined to DC Comics. Now, aside from his comics work, Joe Kubert was probably best remembered and always will be remembered as being the founder and the first head of the Joe Kubert School of Comic Book Art and Animation. And it's quite possible that here is where Joe Kubert is going to have his lasting legacy. This is where he's really going to be remembered, as so many fantastic comic book artists have come out of the Joe Kubert School. Such artists as Steve Bissett and Jander Sima and John Tottleben. I mean, he really had a lot to do with molding the generation of DC artists in particular that came out of the 1980s and into the 90s before the extreme 90s kind of ruined the artistry in comics, in my opinion. Now, a little known piece of trivia here is that I was going to be applying for the Kubert School for the 1980-81 school year. And as it happened, I had prepared my portfolio and was actually talking with Joe Kubert on the telephone, trying to work out some sort of arrangement that would allow me to go to New Jersey and to go to the Kubert School. And unfortunately, my family made it impossible for me to do that. But that was certainly a dream of mine back when I was a teenager, was to go off to the Kubert School. And had I done so, yeah, I would have been classmates with like Stephen Bissett and John Tottleben. I mean, this was right during the era when they were all there. And that would have been a really exciting time to be there. And unfortunately, it just didn't work out. And at that point, my dreams of being a professional comic book artist were kind of crushed. And, you know, maybe that's for the better. Maybe that's not what I was really meant to do. Though, you know, was podcasting what I was meant to do? I seriously doubt that. Joe Kubert, of course, is survived by his family, and including his two sons, Adam and Andy, who are both comic book artists and successful ones in their own right. So anyway, very sad to hear that Joe Kubert has passed. And of course, you know, we have his comic books to look at. You know, he had quite a lot of output over the years, and it's a shame that he's gone. Okay, so this is going to be one of the shorter shows this week that I was talking about earlier, trying to get some vacation shows in the can so that I don't have to take any weeks off during my vacation coming up. And so we're just going to cover one issue this time, and so let's move on to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
Indeed, and this week we're going to behold in breathless wonder Thor number 370. Cover date is August of 1986. It retailed for 75 cents. The cover artist is John Buscema. And yeah, this is a fill-in issue, so it has a very generic cover here of Thor just kind of standing on this big piece of rock, and he's got some green Kirby space behind him with a little bit of Kirby crackle. And otherwise, it's kind of a generic cover. And the cover blurb says, "The Thunder God challenges the ultimate foe for the fate of all Asgard." And we open up to the splash page where we have the creative team for this issue. James Owsley was the scripter. You know, he's the guy who wrote the Thor graphic novel, so you know you're in for a treat. John Buscema was the penciler. P. Craig Russell was the inker. John Workman was the letterer. Paul Becton was the colorist. Ralph Macchio, the editor. And, of course, the editor-in-chief was Jim Shooter. So the splash page shows us that this is going to be a little bit different from your normal Thor issue. Yeah, it's a fill-in issue, so they can get away with doing something a little bit different. And we are introduced to the town of Danville, Texas, in the year 1875. And we see some ladies on the street and some, you know, cowboy-looking characters. And we see a guy wearing a cowboy hat and a vest and a gun belt, and he's being thrown out the window of a saloon. And yeah, it seems like a very strange beginning for a Thor story. And we have the title of the story. It's called Easy Money. And we learned that this guy who got thrown out the window is named Sundance. So yeah, the Sundance Kid? I don't know. They don't say the Sundance Kid, but his name is Sundance. And he gets thrown out the window, and he's like, "Gee, some days it just don't pay to get out of bed. All right, you asked for it." And he starts shooting towards the saloon, but he misses his targets, and these three guys are just standing in the doorway, not even trying to dodge the bullets. And this big fat guy, and he's wearing a blue suit and a pink shirt, and his shirt doesn't have a button at the bottom, so his belly is showing, and he's unshaven. He's got this really ratty-looking bowler hat on. He's like, "Know something, Sundance? You're a darn sorry shot. Your aim's almost as sorry as your card playing. We don't take kindly to card cheats here in Danville." And he shoots at him, and he wings his shoulder. And it's like, "Not kindly at all." And Sundance is like, "Yo! So why don't you just mosey on out of town, say by sundown? Unless, of course, we gots to get ugly." And Sundance is like, "But it's almost sundown now." And one of the guy's men says, "Sundance, comes a time in a man's life when he's got to stop being a worm, you know? I reckon this here's your time." And he throws a deck of cards at Sundance and goes storming off back into the saloon. So what have we learned? Well, we learned that Sundance is a card cheater, and these guys have chosen not to kill him for whatever reason. So I guess these are the good guys. At least that's how it looks from now. So they leave Sundance there in the middle of the street, and he's kind of complaining to himself, "That's what I get for fleecing the locals. Blasted coal miners got no sense of humor. What's so bad about having five aces?" And the old man comes up behind him, and this is your typical Gabby Hayes old prospector character that you see in all the Western comics. Like, "Leaving town, are ye?" "Maybe. What's it to you, Pops?" "Well, if and maybe you're riding out, then maybe I got some ways for you to make an honest dollar. Unless you got something against that sort of thing." And he asks him what he's got in mind. And he says, "When you head out of town, take the road to Aberdeen. When you get there, you'll meet a man with a white horse. And give him this." And he hands him like this little ticket thing. He says, "A claim check from the Union Pacific Railroad. What's it for?" "Nothing you can get any money for. The man in the white horse will give you $100 for this. Now get. The sun's going down, and I see him a-coming." And Sundance's like, "See who? I don't see." And there's a gang of evil-looking guys riding horses into town, and the old prospector's scurrying off. And Sundance's like, "Hey, wait, what's all this about?" "It's about pride, boy, and honor redeemed. Comes a time in a man's life when he's going to stop being a worm, you know." So here's our theme for the issue. And these mysterious riders are getting closer and closer to town. And Sundance decides he's going to get out of town, hops on his horse, getting ready to ride out of town. And he's thinking to himself, though just where I'm going and what I'm going to do with this here claim check, I ain't decided. I wonder if... And he's getting out of town, and he turns around to look at the town, and those boys are surrounded the saloon already. But that's impossible. And these evil riders, you can tell they're evil because they're colored red. All of them are colored red. And they're all shooting up the saloon, and they're just from the outside. You got guns, go blam, blam, pow, 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 blam. Sundance, like, thinking to himself, they blew the place up. Must have killed everybody in there. What's his claim check for? Why would men kill for it? Let me out of here. And he goes riding off on his horse. And they cut to the saloon, and you see that everybody inside the saloon is dead. And one of the guys is saying here, all dead. The fools never knew what hit him. Better tell the boss it's okay, too. And we see the boss come in, and he's this guy, and he's got a long, kind of pointy chin. He's wearing a cowboy hat and a green cloak, so you know he's evil.
I already know, fool. Where is the one I seek?
And they bring the old man to him. Right here, boss.
So, I have found you at last. You made a grave error in betraying me.
We then cut to the crossroads, where the crossroad between Aberdeen and Wilmington, and Sundance is making a fateful decision. He decides he's not going to go to Aberdeen. And he says, this claim check's worth a whole lot to somebody, namely some guy on a white horse in Aberdeen. Well, think I'll wait to see what it's worth to old Sundance. And he decides to go off towards Wilmington. And then we cut back to Danville, where the story began. And we see a white horse tied up outside of the saloon. And then we see inside the saloon, the old prospector is laying bleeding to death behind the bar. And a shadow falls across him of a muscular man in a blue suit. It actually looks kind of like Ghost Rider's outfit. It really does. And he's like,
you? Thank the All-Father you've come.
Huh, thanking the All-Father? That seems like a kind of strange thing to say in a Texan town in 1875. And the stranger kneels over the old prospector and he says,
claim check, Union Pacific Railroad, a young drifter named Sundance, Aberdeen.
And they cut to a few hours later, and Sundance is riding through the streets of Wilmington. And he's like, well, well, Wilmington at last. Maybe I can find a good card game to pay the room and board. Well, 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 the saloon's still open. Hope it's full of nice plump pigeons.
Then again, maybe tonight was like a warning. I was lucky that guy just clipped my shoulder instead of planting me on Boot Hill. Maybe somebody's trying to tell me something. Maybe I should try and make an honest living.
Nah. And he goes into the saloon. He says,
okay, yo ladies, get out of the way, because the real men are going to play some serious poker.
And he walks in, and he notices these guys are, they look real familiar, and they look like a nasty bunch. And he recognizes them as the gang that shot up Danville. And he's thinking, oh, it's them, the guns who shot up Danville, but that's impossible. And he says, on second thought, maybe I'll just go take a bath. And he gets getting ready to leave, and he gets grabbed by this guy in the green cloak, who tells him to sit down. He says, yeah, you know what, I think I'll sit a spell. And the man in the green cloak tells him,
your claim check is of no use to you. I already know where the crate it's registered to is. I shall claim it shortly. You, on the other hand, were instructed to go to Aberdeen. Why aren't you there?
But Sundance is making excuses, and the old guy takes off his hat, and he looks like Loki, but he's old, and he's got these wrinkly lips, and he looks like he's like all aged.
Go to Aberdeen, Sundance. There you will meet a man on a white horse. Lead him to the railroad crossing at Buzzard Gulch at precisely high noon.
He's supposed to give me $100.
Paltry sum. I can do better.
He summons in his hand this deck of glowing cards. And he says,
this deck of cards is enchanted. With them you will never lose a hand again. You will also be charmed against injury and death.
And he's like, yeah, sure, right. Tell me another one. And this guy's like,
you dare mock me?
And the guy rips his bandage off from his, the wound where he got grazed by the bullet. And he's like, that's an open wound, mister. And the old guy slams the cards up against it and takes the cards away, and the wound is healed. And he's, I don't believe it. It's healed. Mister, you got yourself a deal. And he goes riding off, and we see the old man looking very pleased with himself. And we then cut to the village of Alberdeen. It says Alberdeen at dawn. And see a hotel and a white horse tied up outside the hotel. And we see Sundance, he's sleeping, but the shadow falls across him of this mysterious character with a cowboy hat. And he wakes up and he's like, all right, mister, I don't know who you are, but you've made a big mistake. And he rolls off the bed and it's kind of covered by the sheet. He's shooting, but he's missing, you know, because he's a lousy shot. It's like blam, blam, blam. And he goes pew, pew, pew. And didn't hit him. And it's like, darn, I can't hit the broadside of a barn. But wait a minute. Hey, mister, you wouldn't happen to be riding a white horse, would you? And the guy takes his hat off and we see it looks like Thor. Except again, he's really old looking. He's got these wrinkly lips and it looks like he's aged quite a bit. I guess to John Buscema, any old person automatically has these wrinkly lips. We then shift scenes to near noon, 11:45, near Buzzard Gulch, and a train approaching Buzzard Gulch, whatever that is. And they see something in the track, and the engineer's like, what the heck is that? I ain't seen nothing like it. And it's this big stone structure that's right in the middle of the railroad track. And the engineer's like, Henry, can we stop in time? I'm trying. That thing was put there, Henry, but that ain't possible. No man could have done that. It's this great big, like, Stonehenge-looking rock structure. What I want to know is just who the heck are they? And they just barely managed to stop the train in time. And the riders ride forward. It's the same guys who shot up the saloon. And the various conductors getting off the train, and they've got guns, and they're shooting at these guys. And they're like, what's going on? The train's being robbed, stupid. Whole mess of robbers. That hunk of stone's the dangest thing I ever did see. And they're exchanging gunfire, and all the conductors look like they're getting shot and falling down. And the villains are attacking the mail car. And we see that the evil cowboy old person who looks like Loki is going in there. And he says, where is it? I must find it. Where? Where? Look for it, you fools. Tear this very car asunder if you must. And then as soon as he says that, he actually finds the crate. And he pulls the crate out and says, I nearly give it up hope. I feared the troll I had entrusted my stolen prize with had actually gotten this to my accursed brother. But no, here it remains, and now it is mine. And he opens it up, and inside are apples. Golden apples. Yeah, we know what that means in Norse mythology. And he starts laughing, and get a shot of him up close laughing, his mouth wide open. Now the gods are doomed. I need this mortal disguise no longer. Let all Midgard tremble in fear of Loki, god of evil. And he grabs one of the apples, and he bites into it, and he instantly grows young again. And it looks very, he doesn't look much different, except now he doesn't look like really old anymore. And now Loki is wearing his costume, the one with the big horns on it that we're used to seeing. And we then shift scenes back to Buzzard Gulch, and we have the Thor cowboy, and he's there with Sundance. And Sundance's like, you don't talk much, do you, old timer? Then again, guess there ain't much to talk about around here, is there? And Thor's like, forgive my grim countenance, Sundance. This is not a good time for me. There's an ancient legend that says the gods, in order to retain their eternal youth, must often feast of the golden apples of the goddess Idun. Yeah, see? Yeah. Have you heard of that myth?
Well, I don't read much.
Without those apples, the gods grow weak and die. Some time ago, my evil brother spirited the golden apples away from Idun by way of a troll he had entrusted. The troll fled here to Earth, hiding in human guise, awaiting his master. Yet the troll had a sudden change of heart. And Sundance is thinking to himself, oh, don't tell me this guy believes in magic apples and trolls. Thor's like, the troll who hid the apples had rebelled against his master. He waited for me to arrive, but my brother found him first. So at least that kind of explains why that old prospector would say praise the Allfathers, because he was actually that troll in disguise. Just as he has apparently found the train first. Loki approaches! and the train is approaching, and we see Loki riding in the front of the locomotive. That must be really hot up there. These were steam engines, and that tank is full of boiling water. But anyway, he's like, "Welcome, accursed brother. Welcome to Asgard. Welcome to Buzzard Gulch. Death rides for thee." And there's a whole bunch of these trolls riding on the outside of the train, looking very out of place and very Asgardian. And Sundance is horrified by this, and he's like, "I had no idea. Come on, let's get out of here." And Thor's like, "No, Sundance, I cannot run. It is not the way. Rather, I shall protect you with my very life if necessary." And he pulls out of the pouch of his saddle his hammer. Yes. And he starts whirling his hammer around, and lightning strikes with a giant shakoom. And he turns into Captain Marvel. Oh, well, that's what he looks like he should be turning into, because Thor doesn't get changed by magic lightning. Anyway, the magic lightning changes him into Thor, and he's wearing his costume, and he's riding on a winged horse. And he's wearing, you know, but he still has white hair, and he looks old. And the flying horse takes off into the air, and Thor says, "Get thee back, Sundance the Valiant." Thor doth race into the very jaws of death. And Sundance is thinking, "Flying horses? Trolls? Sundance, you finally lost your mind." "For Asgard! For Midgard! For Buzzard Gulch!" And Thor flings his hammer at the locomotive, smashes the locomotive with a giant bam! And the trolls all go flying. And the hammer returns to his hand, and he says, "Though the ravages of age strive to overtake me, still shall the son of Odin smite his enemies." And Loki has survived this with no problem. He's like, "Bravo, my half-brother. A rare performance. You are old, weak, without Eden's apples. But 'tis a matter of time till the numbers sweep thee under." And all the trolls are kind of ganging up on Thor, and they make him drop his hammer. And they're like, "His hammer! We've separated his hand from the mystic Mjolnir! He's ours now!" And Loki says, "You, Sundance, you've received your reward. Now be gone." And he's thinking, not a bad idea. And he goes to ride off. He's thinking, he's not my fight. Heck, these guys are gods or something. But that old guy can take care of himself. Oh, heck. And he turns around. He starts shooting his gun at Loki. But, of course, he misses, because the joke here is that he's a really, really bad shot. And he says, "Hey, right over here, boss. I got a bullet with your address on it." He's like, thinking one of them anyway. "I really need to practice my shooting some." And Loki sends one of the trolls to go stop Sundance. And this troll's name is Fagin for some reason. Anyway, so he goes, "As you command, old Loki." And he goes after Sundance. And Sundance is still wanting to shoot at him. And Fagin reaches out with his mouth, and he bites off the barrel of Sundance's gun with a crunch. And Sundance's like, "He ate it. Better try something else." And even though this troll is tough enough that he can eat guns, Sundance whacks him across the face with the chewed up gun and knocks the troll out. Okay, that doesn't seem very plausible to me, but okay, that's what happens. And he's thinking to himself, one gun left and one bullet, and I'm a lousy shot. But if I don't nail that Loki feller, the old timer's dead. But how do I get my hands to stop rattling? Come on, Sundance, don't lose it now. Remember what the man said. Comes a time in a man's life when he's got to stop being a worm. He's pointing his gun, but his hands are shaking like crazy. He pulls the trigger, and gun goes blam. And we see that he shoots the apple right out of Loki's hand. And Loki's like, "Ah, he hit me. The mortal hurt me." Think that's bad, Loki. Well, just watch this. And he dives for the apple. And he picks it up and he throws it to Thor. Though he's a lousy shot, he's really good at throwing. And he throws it right to Thor, who is being overwhelmed by these trolls. He caught it. But was I too late? And we see the trolls piling on. And all of a sudden, all the trolls go flying off in opposite directions. And Thor's like, "Away from me, most foul trolls." You know, just basically just wins the fight right there. And Sundance goes up to Thor and says, "Now that was some scrap you had there, partner. Ah, sorry that Loki managed to get away."
"Never fear, friend Sundance. My evil brother Loki shall reappear eventually, and on that day Thor shall be waiting. For the nonce, however, I must hie me to the fabled Asgard, home of the gods. The gods grow weak with age. Without Idun's golden apples, they will soon perish. And Thor grabs the casket of apples and does his Ajax White Tornado bit. Thus I shall spend no more time searching for Loki, but shall instead summon the winds from the four corners of Midgard to carry me hither to the land of the gods. And he disappears in a gold puff, basically. Farewell, friend Sundance. Thor shall not soon forget thee. And he's gone. And Sundance is riding away and see people standing around the train, which of course got wrecked by Thor's hammer. And Sundance is saying, gone, just like that, as if he'd never been. Well, Sundance, you got out of this one with your skin, and that's saying something. I'd go tell somebody if I didn't think they'd lock me up. Hey, I almost forgot. Loki's magic cards. Maybe I could. And he thinks about it and he says, nah. And he throws the cards over his shoulder. And that is the end of Thor 370. All right, so what to say about this little fill-in issue? And it's obviously a fill-in issue. Very, very simplistic plot. Now, the artwork by John Buscema is sketchy to the point of being really almost not there. And even though we do have an inker credit of P. Craig Russell, the inking that we have here shows absolutely none of his influence. It looks to me like the art on this issue was thrown together virtually overnight. Now, that's not to say that there's no redeeming qualities of the art. There are. I mean, layout-wise, it's a perfectly solid story. But it does fall prey to a lot of problems that rushed art jobs too. One of those traps are really, really bad transitions from one scene to another. You'll have a scene change in the middle of a page, and those are always very jarring. There's not a lot of variety in things like facial features. There's not a lot of variety in, you know, the physical features. You can kind of get away with that as a Western, and a lot of that is because, well, people in Westerns tend to dress a lot alike anyway, and unless you're going to draw a real character, kind of like that guy with the bowler hat in the beginning, you know, you're really not going to have a lot of variety in the kind of things that people are wearing. Now, that being said, this isn't the worst fill-in story that they could have run. Certainly back in the 1970s, Marvel had a lot of real stinkers. Now, time was back in the early to mid-70s when Marvel would have some sort of a deadline problem affecting one of the books. They would just throw a reprint. But at some point around 1975, 1976, Marvel decided, okay, we're not going to do that anymore. It's better to have an original story, even a really bad one, with really bad writing or really bad art or both. It's better to have an original story than to do a reprint. And there are some instances where I'm really not so sure about this. Now, this one is probably a step above most of the fill-in issues that we had during the 70s. It's a fairly interesting narrative. I mean, it is kind of an interesting take on Thor and Loki. Kind of wonder why they bothered going to Midgard, but you figure if somebody steals the golden apples, well, you know, where else are they going to hide it? Though I don't know that Texas would be the best place to hide a crate of apples. Hey, you know, I'm not going to question the logic of the story. You know, it's still reasonably well drawn, even if it was very, very basic on every other level. All right, so that is it for this week. Sorry for the short show, but remember, I am trying to make up some time here before I go on vacation, and so that's why the short show. Now, next week, we're going to have a regular, normal-length show. We're going to cover the end of the Wrecker Saga back in 1968, Thor. So stay tuned for that. And once again, if you want to email the show, you can do so by writing to radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. You can also join our Facebook group. So with that, I'm going to sign off for now. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.